We're going to go live in a sec. Welcome to a very special edition of Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I was reading Publishers Weekly magazine, and they have like authors and books to keep your eye on for maybe it's the fall, the winter, the spring, the summer. And I came across this book that just the title alone fascinated me. And I thought, I have to go get this book. It was called Summer Hours at the Robbers Library. And I read a little bit about it, and I was thinking, wow, here's the story of someone who got caught stealing a dictionary, and her punishment was to work in a library. I thought, I'm all over that. So a couple weeks ago, the Southwest Readers Fest was going on one weekend, and the author of that book, Sue Halpern, was going to be there. So I took my copy of the book and I went over to her and said, I love your book. Will you please come on my show? And there it is. Sue Halpern is with me today. She is the author of Summer Hours at the Robbers Library. About Sue. First of all, she's brilliant. She's funny. She lives in Vermont, where she tells me it's going to snow today, and although it's 91 degrees here in Southwest Florida. She writes books and articles, hangs out with her husband, who is an environmental activist, Bill McKibben. He's very well known. They have a daughter, Sophie, and she has a terrific dog who is a therapy dog. Did I say that right, or is Sophie your actual daughter?
Sophie is my daughter.
Sure. Sophie is your daughter, but you do have a therapy dog, and so
I do.
Okay, so but you're also a Guggenheim Fellow, a Rhodes Scholar with a doctorate from Oxford, and the author of a book that was made into an Emmy-nominated film, besides a bunch of others that weren't. And you're a scholar in residence at Middlebury College, and your most favorite thing on your bio, that you're a huge supporter of the ice cream industry. So welcome to Authors on the Air. I mean, I just should like close out the show and go home now. You're just too smart for me.
It's so not true. This is not true. Don't believe anything Pam says, except that she likes my book, which makes me very happy.
I love your book. I have to tell you that I'm always attracted to titles and to cover art. And so it's a really important thing for writers to remember that you can't Photoshop a cover and you can't just throw up a name on a book without thinking about it. It really has to be a strong title to, when you're doing thumbnail looks through Amazon and other places where you look at books. I just have to know where this story idea came from, because it's so unique and it's not anything like anybody's going to imagine. It is a very delicate, balanced, witty, beautifully written character study. Where did you come up with this book and this idea, Sue?
So it came out of a couple of different strands. And, you know, there are three main characters in this book.
Yes.
The main character is a woman named Kit, who's a librarian, hence the library. And I'd written a story many years ago, not many years, a bunch of years ago, for The New Yorker. And it was a totally unrelated. It was about PTSD and soldiers that had been in Afghanistan and Iraq,
yes,
actually. And I heard this very strange statistic, which was that people who had gone through trauma often about 2 years after they've been through that trauma, if they were able to get through it, would say that their life was kind of better off. That they knew more and they were more attuned to what was important in life. And that stuck with me. And I thought, I wanted to write about someone who had been through something really tough, something that really kind of shook her world. This is Kit. And yet I wanted to show her going through the coming out process, the going, you know, something bad had happened. And I didn't want to show her 2 years later when everything was great, but I just wanted to show the kind of incremental things that happened to make a life more meaningful and to get over something that was difficult and traumatic. So that's part of my instinct. And the other thing was that I had lived for many years in a very, very small town in upstate New York that did not have a library. And I was tasked with two of my neighbors by the town board to start the first public library in this town. And this was a very difficult task because we had almost no money and we certainly had no books and we had no librarian. And yet we were able to pull this off, and it was transformative for individuals in the town and it was transformative for the town. And now that library, which started with, I think, 3,200 books that were all borrowed essentially from a regional library system, now has 40,000 books.
Wow.
And it has so many programs going on, and it really changed the whole dynamic of the town. And so I had this real understanding that libraries and books can really be transformative for people. And so I wanted to place my characters in a library and, again, sort of not knock you over the head with, like, hey, libraries can be transformative, but just sort of show that within this space that is very welcoming to pretty much everybody, things can happen. People meet each other who might not necessarily have anything that they have in common, and yet the thing that is kind of binding them together is this place.
You know, I want to take your first point where you talk about PTSD. I like the fact that we do not know why Kit is so closed off. We have no idea, but we know it was something really horrible, and we know it has to do with her husband. And
right.
I was very on edge about that because even though she, you know, would refer to newspaper articles and everything and say, I'm not that girl, I'm not that girl, I'm not that girl, I kind of suspected what it was, but was never really sure because she's so closed with everything, even to herself. She's very, very closed off.
Yeah.
And it's not until this kid, whose world is so different from hers, who comes in and starts making inroads, and her way of communicating is to say, here, read this. I thought that was a very interesting thing. I have often myself started conversations by, do you like to read, or what do you like to read? And I'm often very stunned when people say, I've never read a book for pleasure. It's so not in my world. It's so against everything I know and understand that I think, how can you not have read something for the pleasure of reading, regardless of what it is? It doesn't have to be fiction.
Yeah.
Could anything.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I very much related to this book, even though a library wasn't real, real important to me to when I was at a very bad time in my life. And I could walk to a new library, a brand new library, with like a shopping cart that you see like old ladies putting their groceries in, you know, one of those wheelie carts that they get at the grocery store.
Yep.
I used to go to the library because I'd say, how many books can I check out per month? And they'd say 50. And I'd say, great. And I'd load up that basket with 50 books and read them all and go back and you know, couldn't wait for my month to be up. So it was just revelatory to me. I loved the library and met a lot of cool people there too.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. Libraries are, they're one of those like common spaces where you don't really know who you're going to encounter and you don't know what points at which you're going to connect with those people. And that was one of the things we learned when we started our library, that people in the town who, by the way, in when given the option of having their taxes raised about $3 a year, said no, because they thought they would never use this space, found themselves, once we started this library, in the library. Like, we had some movies, or, you know, we had books about hunting or whatever we had, and people were like, oh, that's what the library is. And so they would be in there, and they would start having conversations with each other, and that was amazing. But it's a place where you can go and be quiet. You don't have to talk to anybody.
Yes. The new libraries now are fascinating to me because I had no need to go to a library as a kid because I read books, copious amounts of books, and would absolutely get lost in a book and not hear the cacophony of sounds around me in a very big and noisy family and neighborhood. But our schools were well-stocked. I went to a parochial schools, and it was well-stocked, and we could read everything. My mother was an avid reader, too. So I love this story because just the premise that someone is trying to steal a dictionary from a Barnes & Noble, and the punishment is to go and work in the library. It's one of those great stories, those, like, YouTube videos that you see, you know, that says, look at how wise this judge is, you know, and he does this kind of alternative kind of punishment. And I thought, oh, this could be a Facebook meme. It's so cool. You know, a girl who does not have a formal education and gets caught stealing a library because she hates having to ask people to explain stuff to her. And so she has to go work at a library, and she's not horrified by it at all. As a matter of fact, she's thrilled. And everybody else is
happy.
Yeah, she's so happy. And the people around her are like, oh, you're a bad girl, you know. But she's not.
No.
What a delightful story.
Yeah, I mean, I loved writing that character, Sunny, who's 15 and steals the dictionary, and really is kind of like a feral child. I mean, she's being raised by these kind of hippie parents who don't send her to school and who are very suspicious of, you know, government schools, public schools, and are even suspicious of the library. And and yet she is just so happy to be there. And she has this feeling, I think, that she really wants to be a writer, because really books have been her friends. I mean, in some sense, her only friends.
Yeah.
Because her parents, you know, they're living out there in the middle of nowhere. And then she realizes she can connect with Kit over books.
Yes.
And they can, you know, have that relationship even though they're, you know, very different ages and from completely different places in their lives and all of that. And that's, I think, the other thing that books do to people. Like, you enter this world and then you want other people to kind of enter it too, or they have because they've read the book, and you're like, yes, did you remember when this happened? And it's just this sense of connection, and those two get it through those books. And then there's, you know, our other character, Rusty, who doesn't seem like a reader. He's not really a reader, but he comes to the library for different reasons, and they just sort of adopt each other.
Right. Well, it's just like you're saying, it's a transformative place, and Rusty is there to research his legacy, or so he thinks, and, you know, ends up socializing with the old dudes who go in there, and then kind of with Kit a little bit, and you see this little nuclear group forming, and it's really quite lovely. It's a very charming book, and one of my favorite reads. I will tell you that because I have the blessing of being able to read so many books, so many are sent to me. When I read a book that doesn't talk down to me as a reader, writer is able to, you know, use this expansive vocabulary and really raises the bar. I get excited about that. I think that's why I want to go back and read it again, because I kind of went through it pretty fast. And now I want to go back and savor it. So I'm going to do that, okay? I'll go back and read it again tell you what I learned the second time that I didn't get the first time. Because there will always be gems in there. You know, do you ever read books that you've read before and, you know, liked them so much, maybe a year later you go back to them? Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think I think people who love books. I mean, you know, I often go back and read children's books that I read, like A Wrinkle in Time, for instance.
I just bought that
because,
again. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, just...
Yes.
Just, well, I think it's like sort of part of the conversation now, but it was just... Or like Harriet the Spy. You know, just these books that they have these stories that were somehow very, like, formative, you know?
Yes.
And yet you sort of, like, you know they are there inside of you, but, like, you can't completely remember what they are. And then you go back and read them, and it's like, oh. Or, like, my daughter read A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. I would say she probably read it about 20 times. I mean, she could literally recite to you the first 20 pages. Word for word, if she read it so many times, and it just was so meaningful to her. So, yeah, I mean, I think we go back and we read stuff that either, you know, we read it because we thought it was beautiful, or we read it because we can't remember it, or we read it because... it's somewhere inside of us.
I think that for me, I love how the words sound out loud. And so I sometimes will find myself reading out loud. For example, when I read like The Prince of Tides, which is one of my favorite literary pieces ever, even when I started reading that book, I went back and read the first chapter over and over and over again out loud, because I loved the way the words sounded together. So there are books to me that, and you know, as you, I'm sure you know this, that reading quietly and then reading out loud fires different parts of your brain. And it, just like listening to books also fires a different part of your brain. And all of it's delightful. I don't do audiobooks at all. I can't stay in the book if I do an audiobook, but I do like to read out loud. And there were several passages in Robert's Library that joyfully read out loud that I kind of chuckled at. I like them very much. So I would be going back. But I want to kind of ask you and move on from the book for just a moment. You just like writing a lot, don't you? You have written so many things. The New York Review of Books, is that RB, NYRB?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, and you've written for Smithsonian. You've written for so many different Parade and all these wonderful, and I love that you wrote for Orion Magazine. You do quite a bit of, a little bit of political, but you do other things too. You've Condé Nast Traveler. I mean, that's so interesting to me. And Mother Jones, one of my favorite things to read. Where did your love of writing start, Sue?
I think it started in the library. I mean, I know it's probably kind of sounds a little funny as a person who just wrote a book about a library, but, you know, I spent so much time in the library when I was a kid. We didn't have a lot of books at home, and all the books we had at home were, you know, grown-up books that were kind of boring, but there weren't that many. And so I just love to read, and there was just a point in time when I thought, this is what I want to do. I want to do this thing that these other people are doing that, you know, and there was just, you know, I remember writing, I wrote a short story when I was in seventh grade, and I was asked to read it at, you know, the night when all the parents come and, you know, they come to your class. And you know, and I was sort of I was kind of at the climax of this story, and the bell rang and everyone had to leave, and they all stayed. They all stayed to hear what happened. And I was like, whoa, that's so powerful. Like, they really wanted to know. And it was just this great feeling like, oh, I can entertain people, I can think about things, I can explore the world in my head, and I can explore the world, like you say, like Condé Nast Traveler, like in life. Because that's what writing gets lets you do. I mean, it's just a process of exploration.
Well, you know, you've written quite a few books now, and they're all so different. Do you mind if I ask about your collegiate and post college education? I'd like to know what you studied and what your majors were.
So I studied political science in college. I thought I was going to be an English major. That made the most sense. But I just sort of had this idea that I would always read and I would probably always write. And I just wanted to learn about stuff I didn't really know anything about, mm-hmm. or, you know, not very seriously know about. So I did that. And then sort of somewhat ironically, I got this fellowship to go to study at Oxford, and I had already been studying political science, so they were like, you should continue to do this. So I did, and sort of a little bit, not because I loved it, but because I was sort of on that path. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up getting a doctorate, sort of like almost by accident. But the benefit of that has been that it's given me a way to think about the world kind of outside of myself in larger
yes.
ways. And mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, some of the time I do write about politics, and some of the time I write about sort of social issues. And it all sort of, I think, comes from having that perspective. For instance, and this is going to sound a little pointy-headed, but I have always written, like you said, I've written a lot of different kinds of books, and it's true, but the sort of through line in all of that has been, I'm really interested in subcultures and, like, people who do things that are kind of different from what other people are doing,
yes.
or questions, and that really comes from politics. It comes from, like, what is it about America that makes this country that's so full of so many different kinds of people that makes it really work? And the answer really is that there are so many of us that where we have things that connect us even though we're very, very different.
I agree.
So for instance, I wrote a book. Yeah, I wrote a book about the people who follow the migration of the monarch butterflies. Those people are, I mean, you could put them in a lineup and, you know, they would have different political affiliations. They would have different religious affiliations. They'd be from different parts of the country and all of that. But they all have this one passion, which is this migration of these little, you know, half a gram butterflies. And that's the sort of thing that I'm just interested in. What are the things that connect us, even though we look very, very different to each other? And that's really what this novel is about. So, yeah, so that's, you know, that, and that really comes from having studied, you know, sort of American politics.
Which book was turned into an Emmy nominated movie?
That book, the butterfly book, was made. It was really interesting.
Migrations to Solitude.
It was, no, that was my first book. It's called Four Wings and a Prayer.
Four Wings and a Prayer.
It's
uh-huh.
about this, and, so it was made into a full-length movie, I think even an IMAX movie, but it was also made into a movie for TV. So I guess they cut it differently.
Wow.
Edited it differently. And yes. And that one, and it was very interesting because it was produced by a consortium from around the world. So Japanese TV, French TV, Canadian TV, and like the Discovery Channel in the United States all contributed to the making of this movie because it was very expensive to follow these butterflies.
I'm sure.
And, you know, because they travel from Canada down to Mexico. So it, you know, they made it into movies or TV movies for all those different markets. So it showed and really was cut differently in each of those,
how
in
interesting.
Each of those countries. So that was really cool.
I bet
yeah.
that was pretty exciting for you, too.
It was really fun. It's like the most visual, rich visual thing you can imagine, these butterflies and especially in Mexico where, you know, you
right.
have hundreds of millions of them. And it's just
right.
like so
and
beautiful.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to talk
really
to you
stunning.
About, can't remember what I forgot. having worked for a long time as a geriatric rehab therapist in nursing homes, memory loss was obviously a huge factor, whether it was because of a dementia, Alzheimer's, stroke, things like that, head injury, brain injury. But I love what you say about this. She said, this is not the first time while researching, can't remember what I forgot, that Halpern had her head examined, nor would it have been the last. So why did you do this, and why did you decide to have your head examined? Because you call it good news from the front lines of memory research, which is a really hot topic these days.
Yeah, well, it should be as we age.
Yes.
So I wrote that book because for the simple reason that every single person around me would say something like, I can't find my keys, I must have early onset Alzheimer's, or
right.
oh, I'm having a senior moment. You know, these are people in their 40s. I'm having
right.
a senior
right.
moment. And
right.
I was like, wait a minute. So that can't be true. Like, they can't all have Alzheimer's, and they can't really be having a senior moment. So I had this question, which was simply, is there something called normal memory loss? Not pathological, not Alzheimer's, not,
right.
you know,
not an illness
know, whatever
or an injury.
Other disease.
Sure.
Yeah. So is there something like that, just the same way like your skin starts to, you know, disintegrate, is there something that happens in our brains that makes it harder and harder and harder for us to remember stuff that's just normal? And the answer to the question in short is yes. And it really begins, weirdly enough, our memory actually starts to degrade around 20. When we're about 20,
you're
and
kidding.
It's not kidding. I mean, not in a kind of appreciable way. It's not like, you know, you will notice it, but it does. When they do, you know, various kinds of tests, they can show that, you know, if between, let's just say, I don't know, 17 and 20, and then say 25.
It's all downhill after that.
It is, sadly. But
so what did you learn about? Yeah, about keeping
yeah.
memory sharp. Did you learn something that helps to slow down that?
Yes. I mean, this is one of the funnier things. I would give these lectures around the country about this book, and then I would say at the end of the lecture, you know, if I told you I had this thing that was going to help you not have, you know, your memory start to degrade and it would just help you maintain your memory. And, you know, would you want it? And everyone's like, yes, yes, yes. And I'd say, okay, great. Put on your sneakers and go take a walk. Because the best thing you can do for your brain is to be physically active. That's number one. And the second best thing you can do is to be interactive with other people. Those are the two best things, and
God,
they are
I am
very important.
So screwed, Sue. I am screwed on 7 ways from Sunday here. I am a hermit who lives with 5 cats, although I do talk to them, I have to tell you. But and here I thought reading
yeah,
was going to be my cure.
Reading isn't bad, but in fact, the thing that's curing you, the thing that's actually important for you, is the fact that you talk to people all the time. That's,
I do.
You do. Yeah. You might not leave
yeah.
your house, but you're always
talking
to people.
No, and I actually do, because I actually have two other businesses. One that makes me leave the house because I was afraid I was getting weird, you know, from sitting inside. So I interact with people all day long. And then I also have a pet sitting business. So I interact with animals also, and I'm walking with them. So I am doing those things probably, you know, but it's good to know that talking and interacting with others, because that's real, that's critical. You have such a fascinating life, and I feel like we've only just touched on some of the things I want to know about you. You're just so darn interesting, and I want to know more. I want to know about all your books, but let me ask you a few things about you. What would we be surprised to learn about you, other than the fact that you, and you've admitted your addiction for ice cream?
Yeah.
Food type you could take on a deserted island, it would be ice cream, but what flavor would it be?
Oh, that's really hard, and I feel that I can't answer that, because I feel like it depends on, kind of depends on the day.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm gonna go with, it's got to have chocolate in it. It doesn't necessarily have to be chocolate, but it has to have chocolate in it. I'm going with that.
So what else would we be surprised to know about you?
I don't know if this would be actually surprising, but I do sing to my dog.
You sing to your dog.
And
I have done that to my cats, so it's good to know that if you're crazy, I am too, and I'm okay with that. You know, so.
I don't think it's crazy. I feel that it's a mark of sanity. The world is really screwed up. Might as well sing to your dog.
There you go. I sing to the cats, so I feel better about that. I'm feeling better about myself from the moment we started talking, I'll tell you. You've got me all keyed up. What is your next project?
You know, I don't completely know. I just started. This is like a completely different thing, but I've done a lot of writing on, it's going to sound crazy because of what we've been talking about, but I've written a lot about sort of the intersection of technology and politics, or sort of social, like how people think about technology. And like right now, Facebook is in the news a lot, and I've written a ton about Facebook. And so the New Yorker, their online NewYorker.com just asked me to be contributing lots of stories about that. And so I just did two, and I'm working on another one. And I sort of feel like I'll kind of try to get up to speed writing quickly, which is something I don't usually do, and sort of more topically than I maybe usually do. So I'm going to be doing that for a while and see where that goes, and also thinking about another novel.
I think that's great. I would be remiss if I did not mention your activist and environmentally conscious husband, Bill McKibben, who I'm very familiar with. You do a lot of things with him, don't you? You write that you consort with your husband, and I can't tell you how thrilled I am to hear that, since he is your husband. But are you an activist along with him? It seems to me you are, just by the titles of your books.
Yes and no. I mean, there's a certain part of me that just sort of can, you know, feeds the environmental stuff to him. I mean, that's what he does, and I'm glad he does it, and we're all better off for it. But I feel like when it's necessary to be an activist, that's what I will be, and that's what I am. But it's good. You know, for Bill, it's really his identity. And I don't feel like it is for me, although, you know, if I see something that I think needs to be talked about or written about, for instance, mm-hmm. I just wrote a piece about the fact that there was an attempt, oh, by the way, it's snowing out, there was an attempt by the Trump administration to cut funding for the federal funding, which isn't a lot, for public libraries, happily Congress chose not to go along with that, and so I thought that required, you know, some activism, both in terms of, you know, engagement on, say, social media, but also in terms of writing. So I wrote some pieces about that. So
good.
When things arise, one of the things that's happened with the butterflies is that there's been a fair amount of habitat destruction.
Yes.
And it's, you know, and so it's important to write about, you know, why it's important not to mow the median strips in on highways, because that's
right.
where they get their food and, you know, stuff like that. But I wouldn't say it's my identity. But I do consort
Very
with
good.
Them. This is true.
I'm so glad. And we are so out of time. I have taken more time than you gave me permission to take. But I hope that you will come back again and talk to me again, because I think you're fascinating. And I'm going to go and buy the rest of your books just because of who you are.
Okay. Good for you.
I hope I read all of them, you know. And if we want to find out more about you, where do we go on the web, Sue?
SueHalpern.com. This is my name.
And that pretty much tells everything.
H-A-L-P-E-R-N.
There you go.
You know, I had to, like, there are so many of my articles on there. You could spend the rest of your life reading them. It's just crazy. So don't do that.
I won't, but there are some I'm very fascinated with, and I'm going to go read them. Sue Halpern, the book is of course,
whatever.
The Robbers Library. And let me just tell you the true title. It's Summer Hours at the Robbers Library. It's a delightful book. I hope that listeners will go and get it. And Sue, I hope that I get to chat with you again soon. Thank you so much for being with
Absolutely.
Me on Authors on the Air. You know, and
thank you, Pam.
Stay warm. I'm peeling off my clothes and running around in the air conditioning. It is so bloody hot out here. We'll talk again soon. Thank you for listening,
All
everybody.
Right.
Thank you, Sue Halpern. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.